Hello everybody and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford District Talking Newspaper. We're reading articles from the Wallingford Herald, published on Wednesday, July the 1st, 2026. Your three readers this evening are Jane Poulter, Sue White and Jill Davies. The copier is Roger Scammell and the producer is myself, Lawrence.
Hello, I'm Jill. And this article is entitled Councillors to Debate New Powers on Parking Fines. Parking wardens may soon be able to give out fines to drivers who park on the pavement under plans that look increasingly likely to go ahead. Pavement parking will be debated by councillors on Oxfordshire County Council next week after a motion was put forward by Bethia Thomas. The council leader for the Vale of White Horse District has put forward plans to the county to ban the method of parking. The pavement parking doesn't just mean leaving an entire car on the path. It can include leaving two wheels on the edge of the curb too. Ms. Thomas will say to the council that it causes significant danger, particularly to disabled people or those with mobility issues. Meanwhile, County Council Cabinet Member for Transport Gareth Epps, like his predecessor, Andrew Gant, has also backed a ban on pavement parking. He told this newspaper that it wouldn't be a countywide blanket ban, but would be introduced on a case-by-case basis for each pavement. Ms. Thomas said the call for the civil enforcement officers to be given powers to enforce the policy is cost-neutral to the council. If her motion is successful next Tuesday, Council Leader Tim Bearder will write to the local Transport Minister in Westminster asking for further resources to implement the ban. Mr. Epps said, "I am pleased that the government has given local government powers relating to pavement parking and there have been calls for this for many years. I look forward to the debate next Tuesday." In January, the Department for Transport said councils will be given new and improved legal control to make it easier to restrict pavement parking across wider areas. This is instead of relying on the previous approach, where action is often limited to individual streets and requires lengthy, complex processes, the government said. Local Transport Minister Lillian Greenwood explained that clear pavements are essential for people to move around safely and independently, whether that's a parent with a pushchair, someone using a wheelchair, or a blind or partially sighted person. A survey of 1,709 UK drivers commissioned by the RAC last year suggested 83% want new rules on pavement parking. RAC Senior Policy Officer Rod Dennis said pavement parking is a serious problem in some communities that needs tackling. He added, "No pavement user should be forced into walking or wheeling into the road because of someone parking inconsiderately. A clear majority of drivers agree and want to see an end to needless pavement parking that causes accessibility problems, but when it comes to the solution, the jury is out." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of somebody who's inconsiderately parked on the pavement on Windmill Road in Headington. And there's also a picture of Bethia Thomas.
Hello, I'm Jane. My first article is Man Pleads Guilty to Sexually Assaulting Girl. A South Oxfordshire man has pleaded guilty to sexually assaulting a 15-year-old girl. Carl Miles, 39, of Ibston Court, Cholsey, appeared at Oxford Crown Court. Miles pleaded guilty to two counts of sexual activity with a child and one count of engaging in sexual communication with a child. The court heard the offences were committed in Wallingford between June 2021 and April 2023 and that the victim was aged between 14 and 15 at the time. Judge Hassan Khan ordered a pre-sentence report to consider dangerousness. An application was made for Miles to keep his bail, but it was removed by the judge who remanded him in custody. Miles will be sentenced on July the 23rd.
Hello, I'm Sue. Audi driver fined. An Audi driver has been fined after failing to comply with road markings. Hafiz Mohammed Zeeshan, 31, of Pickering Road, Barking, was found guilty of the offence, which took place on the A4074 between Shillingford and Beaconsfield on the 3rd of January last year. He was found to have ignored solid white road markings, a breach recorded by automatic equipment on the route. At a hearing, Zeeshan was fined £100, ordered to pay £100 in costs, and added a £40 victim surcharge. He was also given 3 penalty points on his driving licence. Zeeshan has been ordered to pay the full amount by the 1st of July this year under a collection order.
Reminder to put your bins out earlier. Waste collection days will remain unchanged in part of Oxfordshire under new plans to improve service efficiency. However, residents across South Oxfordshire and the Vale of Whitehorse are being reminded to put their bins out by 6 a.m. from June the 29th, as crews may arrive earlier than usual. The change is due to revised waste and recycling rounds designed to improve reliability. Councillor Sue Cooper, Cabinet Member for Environment at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "We're making some small route changes to help ensure we continue to deliver an efficient and reliable bin service for our residents. This may mean vehicles arriving earlier than usual, so please remember to put your bins out by 6 a.m. on your collection day or the evening before if possible. New routes may affect collection times, though the collection day itself will stay the same." Councillor Robert Clegg, Cabinet Member for Environmental Services, Climate Action and Nature Recovery at Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "Residents won't see any changes to the day their bins are collected, but they may notice our crews arriving earlier than usual. We don't want anyone missing their collection. People are encouraged to make use of the Council's new Bin Days, or one word, web app at southandvale.gov.uk/bin days. Full details about waste and recycling collections are available at southoxon.gov.uk/recycling.
Road to close for 2 months for gas work. An Oxfordshire village road will close for 2 months for roadworks, motorists have been warned. Reading Road in Cholsey, near Wallingford, will close from July the 6th to September the 4th for gas mains replacement work carried out by utility company SGN. The road will shut between the junction with Papist Way to number 16 Reading Road. From August the 4th, Papist Way will be closed from the junction with the Reading Road to Boches Close for the same reason. Advance notice has been given from Oxfordshire County Council's Highways team, with a traffic order prohibiting any vehicle on the section of closed road. It is in force for a maximum of 18 months or until the works are completed, whichever is the sooner. They are expected to conclude on September the 4th. The notice said, appropriate traffic signs will be displayed to indicate when the measures are in force. Exemptions are included for emergency services and for access to premises which are only accessible from the closed section of road. A diversion for the Reading Road closure is via the A329, A4130, A417 and A329 and vice versa. The alternative road for the Papist Way closure is Papist Way, Station Road, the 40, Wallingford Road and Reading Road, and vice versa.
Warning over hazards of jumping from the Thames Bridge. Police have issued a warning to youths who have been jumping from Wallingford Bridge into the River Thames during the heat wave. Thames Valley Police's neighbourhood team for Didcot and Wallingford said that they have been engaging with groups of youngsters who have been repeatedly spotting jumping from Wallingford Bridge. It comes as numerous open warning safety warnings have been issued by police and other officials after the heatwave in May saw 15 people in the UK die in water-related incidents. One of these was Baltazar Leki, a 14-year-old boy who died on Wednesday, May the 27th, after getting into difficulty in the River Thames in Oxford. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "While we absolutely understand people want to enjoy the river during the hot weather, jumping from the bridge is extremely dangerous and not something we support. There are several serious risks involved, for example, unknown water depth and submerged objects, strong currents that can quickly overwhelm even strong swimmers, risk of serious injury on entry due to height, danger to river users such as boats, paddleboarders and swimmers nearby, and cold water shock."
Aunt Sally contest helps hospitals charity. An Aunt Sally tournament at a pub in Wallingford has raised hundreds for a hospital's charity. The Cross Keys pub in Wallingford High Street hosted an action-packed tournament on Saturday, June the 27th, for a lesser-known sporting event. Aunt Sally is a quintessentially Oxfordshire game, which involves throwing sticks to knock a small wooden block called a dolly off a short metal pole known as the iron. Six groups entered into the charity tournament at the annual Cross Keys event, which this year raised a total of £560 for Oxford Hospital's charity. Coming out on top were the Key Crossers, who celebrated winning the competition in classic style with a bottle of fizz, while the Upper Harwell Halve team were named runners-up. David Howes, landlord of the Cross Key, said, "Thank you to everyone who took part. In total from the entry fees and the raffle, we have raised an amazing £560 for Oxford Hospital charity." The iconic dolly was created by regular pub patron Simon Glass, modelled on a different theme each year. And the article is accompanied by a colour photograph of the Key Crossers team celebrating winning the tournament.
Outrage at plans for 170 homes in village. There is outrage over unbelievable plans for 170 new homes in the third house building application made for the same patch of farmland. Olivia Holmes has lodged plans with South Oxfordshire District Council to build 170 homes, parks, allotments, new roads and footpaths on a patch of arable farmland south of the Watlington Road, Benson, near Wallingford. An informal consultation revealed the developer's proposals for the site, which was poorly received by villagers who voiced their opposition to more houses being built on the outskirts of the settlement. Commenting on the newly submitted planning application, neighbour to the proposed development, Sue Price-Jones, said, "Unbelievable, yet another application to add yet more houses on a greenfield site in an already overdeveloped Benson Parish. South Oxfordshire District Council must use all means available to stand up to greedy and predatory developers who see the local authority as a soft touch. Right now, more houses are the last thing Benson New Town needs. An investment in long-promised infrastructure must come first." Immediately north of the proposed new housing estate is a major development currently under construction in Benson, just the other side of the Watlington Road, which will see 240 new homes in the village once completed. One major objection commenters repeatedly brought up is that the land Olivia Holmes wants to build on is not allocated for new housing in the Benson neighbourhood plan, and instead forms part of a green buffer set up around the village designed to maintain its rural feel. One commentator, Helen Shields, said, "Benson is a historic Thameside village and has already more than doubled in size due to new build development. Any more building seriously risks running the rural village character of the area. I hope that those who are considering this proposal will respect the contents of Benson's neighbourhood plan and note that this building cannot be sustained in this village." Other villagers made the point that Benson's infrastructure, including its roads, sewage network, schools and doctor surgery, could not cope with more people moving in. The land proposed to host the 170 new homes has already been subject to repeated house building plans, which have been repeatedly rejected by the council. An application for 120 homes was refused by a planning inspector at appeal in 2017, and another proposal for 180 homes on the same patch of land was refused by the council in 2023. Olivia Holmes claims the new housing would be a logical extension to the town.
Council explores support for our struggling pubs. South Oxfordshire's much-loved pubs could receive extra financial help under new proposals going before district councillors. South Oxfordshire District Councillors' Cabinet will consider a targeted one-off reduction in business rates in July, aimed at easing pressure on pubs across the district. The move follows growing concern that many venues are struggling with rising costs, despite their importance as community hubs, rural assets and employers. Councillor Peter Paul Barker, Cabinet Member for Finance and Property Assets, said, "Everyone knows that pubs are experiencing significant financial pressures. These venues play an important role in the economy and are vital for ensuring a thriving local community. We're considering carefully how best to provide targeted support for pubs in South Oxfordshire, which will both help to strengthen our local and rural economy and safeguard employment in our hospitality sector." Council leader, Councillor Maggie Philippova-Rivers, said, "While this support can't fix everything, it's a step in the right direction. We've stayed focused on collaborating with our local pubs and partners to provide the practical support and guidance they need right now. Details of the proposed business rates support are set out in a report to Cabinet on July the 2nd, when a decision is due to be made." And there is a picture of the councillor Maggie Philippova-Rivers, but I think anyone would have a bit of a struggle seeing it because it's the size of a postage stamp.
Tenants give top marks to council homes. Tenants have given top marks to their housing providers in a recent satisfaction survey. South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils, which currently manage 92 properties across both areas, received 100% satisfaction scores for their housing repair service and property maintenance. Other high scores were recorded for the cleanliness of communal areas and overall safety of the homes. Tony Worgan, Cabinet Member for Property, Housing and Economic Development at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "A decent place to live is the very least we all deserve. We are very pleased that our return to being social landlords has seen such high satisfaction rates amongst our tenants. Now we have set this benchmark, we must ensure that we keep to these high standards for our tenants in the future." The survey forms part of the government's tenant satisfaction measures, which all registered social housing providers are required to report on annually. This marks the council's first performance review since re-registering as local authority registered providers in 2023. Properties under their management are located in Abingdon, Harwell and Wantage in the Vale and District, and Wallingford is in South Oxfordshire. Households include a mix of single tenants and families.
Council wins court battle to get flags off lampposts. Raise the Colour activists have agreed to stop raising England flags after a court battle. Ryan Bridge, Ben Cullen and Trudy Wells, as well as Kevin Good, who did not attend court, have said they will no longer put flags up on lampposts in Oxfordshire. Oxfordshire County Council brought legal action against the group at the High Court, winning a ruling to stop people raising flags near highways, saying it involved safety risks as well as trespass and obstruction. The widespread flying of Union and St George Cross flags followed an online campaign called Operation Raise the Colours, has become contentious and several local authorities have removed them from public infrastructure. While some politicians criticised the removal, others claimed the increased number of flags being flown was a result of xenophobia or racism. The County Council said flags had been placed on or near public roads without permission for months, despite a formal legal notice in March and pre-action legal letters sent to individuals last month. Robin Green for the Council told the High Court that Mr. Bridge, Mr. Cullen, Mr. Good and Ms. Wells had been involved. After a short hearing where the group represented themselves and spoke to Mr. Good by phone, they agreed not to put up more flags, not to encourage others to do so, and not to obstruct any council worker or contractor taking them down. Mr. Justin Dexter Dias said another hearing for July the 9th to be attended by anyone wishing to oppose a court order stopping anyone else from putting flags up or obstructing staff. Mr. Green for the council said, "It is the council's case that no authorisation has been given to the named defendants, or indeed anyone else, to attach flags to lampposts, lighting columns, or any other highway structure. So where that has been done, we say it's an offence." He said the council had also wished to pursue an injunction against the named group, but would be happy for them to make a formal undertaking in the court. Agreeing, Mr. Bridge said he had put the flags up in Oxfordshire for about 6 hours in my life. "We did not want to cause any distress to anybody, which has been stated," he said. "I feel it's a sad day for the flag of our country and what it represents." Ms. Wells, who told the court that she had never put up any flags, but was said to have encouraged others online, added, "I'm not going to have anything more to do with the flags anymore. It's not worth it." Councillor leader Tim Bearder said previously, "We proudly fly the Union flag and St George's flag at County Hall, and we fully support the rights of residents to display flags on their own private property."
Solar panels less efficient during heat waves. Solar panel efficiency isn't at its strongest during heat waves, and hotter days can actually mean lower electricity output. Renewable energy specialists Dwellone, based in Didcot, have warned that solar panels lose efficiency in extreme heat despite the increase in sunlight. Ian McLaren, founder of Dwellone, said, "Solar panels generate electricity from sunlight, not heat. There's a common misconception that hotter weather automatically means better solar performance, but in reality, excessive heat can reduce efficiency. Most solar panels are tested under standard test conditions of around 25 degrees centigrade. For every degree above this, panels typically lose between 0.3 and 0.5% efficiency. During a heat wave, rooftop panels can reach 60 degrees centigrade or more, cutting output by 10 to 20%. Adam Raw, co-founder of Dwellone, said, "In-roof systems sit flush with the within the roof structure, which looks fantastically aesthetically, but they generally have less airflow behind the panels compared to on-roof systems. That reduced ventilation means heat becomes trapped more easily, causing the panels to run hotter." Despite the loss in efficiency, Dwellone says, "The longer daylight hours and clear skies still make heat waves some of the most productive periods for solar energy overall."
Former officer found guilty of misconduct. A former Oxfordshire police officer has been found guilty of gross misconduct for targeted attacks on a gay male Thames Valley police inspector. Former Detective Constable Kasper Bangert from Denmark was investigated for placing drawing pins in the eyes of a photograph of an inspector on 5 separate occasions on 2 separate notice boards between July and November 2024. It was alleged that because the inspector is an openly gay man and therefore granted an anonymity by the panel, the former officer had engaged in targeted homophobic attacks, as no other photographs were defaced in this way. Mr. Bangert admitted most of the factual allegations in the case, but strenuously denied that the motivation was the inspector's sexuality, as he said the first time he found out about his sexuality was during the misconduct hearing, and that he harboured no homophobic feelings or beliefs and would therefore never act with such motivation. Instead, he stated that he only stuck pins in the eyes in the pictures as a practical joke to raise morale, as it gave a googly eye effect. He said that this was a common phenomenon both back in his native Denmark and in the university and naval environments he had previously been in. The panel found Mr. Bangert to be a credible witness, stating he was someone who clearly had a strong moral code, who was acutely aware of his own failings. However, his goggly eyes explanation did not wholly satisfy the panel. The panel retained doubts as to whether the former officer was the team player he claimed to be, as he failed to link Superintendent Riddle's all-user email on November the 7th, 2024, to his own conduct, which had continued until 2 days earlier. It considered it more likely he chose not to come forward, hoping his actions would go undiscovered. Based on evidence, the panel concluded that Mr. Bangert more likely did not know the inspector's sexuality, concluding he didn't act with homophobic motives, which were, however, called unfathomable. The Danish man was found to have caused psychological distress. In the inspector's witness statement, he described how the ongoing actions impacted his confidence in the workplace and personal life, saying he felt like he was being stalked.
No change on litter policy. The Roads Minister has said National Highways will not be responsible for cleaning up the litter from the sides of the A34. Piles of rubbish are frequently seen alongside the dual carriageway, both in the lay-bys and the grassy verges, from motorists who have flung it out of their windows. Last month, Vale of Whitehorse District Councillor for Botley and Sunningwell, Emily Smith, criticised the highly inefficient way of litter picking the A34. Because it is the responsibility of the Vale, it means road or lane closures have to be arranged to get the men at the side of the road to pick the litter. Permission is only ever granted when the road is closed for maintenance of the road, which is the responsibility of National Highways. Ms. Smith urged the Cabinet Member for Environmental Services, Robert Clegg, to write to the Department for Transport asking for a better way of doing things. In essence, that meant National Highways taking responsibility for tidying up the litter strewn on the side. In a letter of reply from Roads Minister Simon Lightwood and shown by Ms. Smith, it was made clear that National Highways has no intention of changing the current policy. Mr. Lightwood said, "I am sorry to hear about the difficulties experienced by the Vale of Whitehorse Council. I recognise that collecting litter can be a time-consuming, costly and somewhat difficult to coordinate. At present, the department does not intend to transfer litter cleansing responsibility of an A road to National Highways. Instead, the department encourages joint working between both National Highways and local authorities to tackle the issue of litter." In response, Ms. Smith said the Transport Minister's letter can be summarised as saying no to the request. Mr. Lightwood added, "National Highways is continuing to work with local authorities to roll out anti-littering measures targeted at preventing road users from dropping litter in the first place. These measures include installing car and lorry height bins, installing solar-powered compactor bins, and exploring the use of AI-enabled cameras to identify and capture littering offences and issue fines to drivers on the network. National Highways policy on litter picking involves only carrying out on motorways and the most major trunk roads, so in Oxfordshire, they will only get the litter pickers out when the M40 is shut." The government agency is only responsible for the A34's condition, including pothole repairs and changes such as new slip roads. The Lodge Hill slip road installation in Abingdon is being carried out by Oxfordshire County Council on behalf of National Highways. And there's a photograph of a very smiley Simon Lightwood overlooking some of the roadworks, which I suspect are at Lodge Hill.
60 mile per hour limits on roads under review. Widespread 60 miles per hour Oxfordshire speed limit reductions are being reviewed by the County Council on dozens of rural roads. Oxfordshire County Council has said that it is examining all the county's A and B roads with dozens of bespoke reductions in the offing. Gareth Epps, Cabinet Member for Transport, said, "This review is all about reducing deaths and serious injuries on our roads. The premise that no one should be killed or seriously injured as the result of a road collision, whatever mode of transport they are using, is at the heart of our Vision Zero strategy. Making sure speed limits are safe and appropriate is key to achieving this. Oxfordshire's last major A&R road speed limit review was carried out 15 years ago, so this review is much needed. The examination of speed limits and safety has been ongoing since 2025, looking into whether existing measures are appropriate, using evidence such as collision data, road layout, and how routes are used. This has already led to reductions on some roads, including lowering national speed limit sections from 60 to 50 miles or 40 miles per hour. Other measures include junction changes or traffic management, with the aim being to ensure rural roads are safe for all users, recognising that many are narrow, winding and shared by drivers, cyclists, walkers and horse riders. The County Council has said that government data shows that its policies have led to significant improvements in road safety, with serious and fatal collisions falling sharply. However, despite this, Mr. Epps said they were far from complacent. So far, the review has led to changes being approved on stretches of the A4074, the A40, the A420 and the A417, as well as corridors such as the A4260 and associated B roads. Additionally, a consultation on changes on the A361 has been completed, with a decision to be taken in July on whether to progress these. Now around 60 more schemes are coming forward in 2026 to 27 as part of the Vision Zero programme.
Care Homes £1,000 donation. A care home presented a £1,000 cheque in support of a project bringing the joys of life on three wheels to elderly residents. Waterside Court Care Home in Wallingford made the donation to Cycling Without Age, a scheme that offers free trishaw rides to care home residents, day centre visitors and older people in the community. The scheme, based in Wallingford, trains volunteer pilots who ensure a safe and enjoyable experience for passengers, helping to combat loneliness and social isolation. Mike Heath, operations manager, said the donation is very much welcomed and appreciated. And the article is accompanied by a coloured photograph of the presentation of the cheque, and it has a caption for the photograph saying, "Waterside Court Care Home in Wallingford donates £1,000 to Cycling Without Age."
Edna completes 100 laps of garden to mark her birthday. This article is accompanied by some lovely photographs of the lady concerned, striding through the gardens with her walker and smiling beautifully. There's another photograph of some balloons marking her 100th birthday. A care home resident has completed a 100-lap garden walk to mark her 100th birthday. Edna Hardy, who lives at Westgate House in Wallingford, completed the challenge around the care home's garden on June the 23rd, raising funds for the Residents' Amenity Fund. The fund supports outings and shared activities for the residents. Miss Hardy, who has lived at Westgate House since June 2024, embraced the idea after a volunteer suggested it to her as a way to celebrate her centenary. Born in Greater London in 1926, she lived through the Second World War, left school at 14 to help support her family, and married her childhood sweetheart in 1948. She moved to Wallingford 67 years ago and has remained closely connected to the community ever since. Daniela Midwinter, home manager at Westgate House, said, "Edna is an extraordinary lady whose warmth, determination and generosity shine through in everything she does. She has embraced life at Westgate House fully and has become such an important part of the community here. The challenge reflects who she is at her core, someone who thinks of others first and wants to create joy and opportunity for those around her. We are incredibly proud to celebrate this milestone with her and to see the way she continues to inspire people of all ages." Miss Hardy completed her final lap, surrounded by fellow residents, care home staff, friends and family, and members of the wider community, including the Deputy Mayor of Wallingford, Mark Hoskins. Mr. Hoskins said, "Seeing Edna complete her final lap at such speed was incredibly impressive. Her undertaking this challenge and giving back to the community says a great deal about her. Congratulations to Edna and well done to everyone here." The garden walk quickly became a source of excitement for the care home, with residents regularly gathering to cheer on Miss Hardy as she completed each lap. She finished the challenge despite the warm weather and was met with applause, cheers and flag waving. Westgate House, which is part of the Order of St John Care Trust, said the funds raised will go towards further outings and shared activities for residents, helping them create lasting memories together.
I'm on the announcements page now. There is one death in our area. Ian Gibson, 26th of December 1962 to the 11th of June 2026. With great sorrow, the family of Ian Gibson announced that, surrounded by the love of them all, near and far, he passed away in the early hours of the 11th of June 2026 at the Royal Berkshire Hospital. Born in Princeton, New Jersey in the USA, Ian grew up in and lived in Oxfordshire. Ian will be deeply missed and remembered for his courage, kind heart and exuberant love of life. He was predeceased by his father, Alan Gibson, and his mother, Jean Irene Gibson, née McKnight. His funeral will take place at St Mary's Church, Cholsey, at 12 noon on the 7th of July, followed by a celebration of Ian at Amwell Springs, Cholsey, from 2 p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to the RNLI via ian-gibson-1962-2026.muchloved.com. On this day in 2007, a ban on smoking in public places came into effect across England, spelling an end to drinkers having a cigarette in pubs, bars and clubs. Last year, punk band Bob Vylan said they were being targeted for speaking up after their comments during a Glastonbury show were branded anti-Semitic and were being probed by police. Birthdays. Leslie Caron, actress, is aged 95. Debbie Harry, rock singer, is 81. Trevor Eve, actor, is 75. Dan Aykroyd, actor, is 74. Pamela Anderson, model and actress, is 59. Missy Elliott, singer and rapper, is 55. In history, in 1837, compulsory registration of births, marriages and deaths came into effect in England and Wales. In 1858, Charles Darwin presented his theory on evolution and natural selection to the Linnean Society in London. In 1872, Louis Blériot, aviation pioneer, was born in Cambrai, France. He was the first person to come to Britain without arriving by sea. 1916, first day of the Battle of the Somme in the First World War, in less than 24 hours there were 60,000 British casualties. 1937, the 999 emergency service came into operation in Britain. 1997, Hong Kong was handed back to the Chinese authorities, ending more than 150 years of British control.
On the Harking Back page by Emma Brennan this week, that's called When Social Life Revolved Around the Dance Floor. Emma looks back on a time when the local dances were where people met and formed new relationships. She says, I was recently talking to my mum about how much of our lives are influenced by the virtual world these days, not least how people socialise and meet people. It's all beyond her comprehension that most of the young people we know met their partners online via dating apps. I sympathise, as it must be nigh on impossible to ascertain if you'd like to get to know someone with only a photograph and a few words, which may or may not be true, to go on. Got me thinking back to how we forged relationships and friendships long before the internet was ever invented, and I asked Mum what it was like for her when she was a teenager in the 1950s. We used to meet people at dances in the local village hall, she said. It was a beautiful hall with a lovely floor and the music provided by the Johnny Nice Band. There was never any trouble because there was someone on the door to prevent any of the riffraff from coming in. I wasn't keen on the dancing, but I could do it, depending on who I was dancing with. Some people were terrible and trampled all over your feet. There was one lad who pumped your arm up and down like he was trying to draw water. I sat near the door, and if I saw him coming towards me, I would disappear into the toilets. In the 1960s, they held annual dances in the car park of the neighbouring town. There was no alcohol at these events, but the town had a coffee bar, which was another place to hang out and meet people. One car park dance participant there was a slight... Sorry. One car park dance person told me that at the last event in 1963, there was a slight altercation between the local youth and the police, started by someone knocking a policeman's hat off. By the time I was at middle school, we had an annual school disco, which was both a joy and a dread for me, because I was quite shy and hated dancing. One year, it was around the time when the film Grease was released, my best friend was going to wear a boob tube top and pencil skirt with high-heeled mule sandals, like those that were worn by the main character Sandy in the film. Others were going to wear those shiny satin trousers. I crazed Mum to buy me a pair of mules, but she would not entertain the idea, insisting they would ruin my feet. Undeterred, I borrowed a pair of sandals from my sister's friend, which she had worn when she was a bridesmaid. Having no luck persuading my mum to cough up for shiny pants either, I resorted to wearing a red velour tracksuit, which was a hand-me-down, even though it was a hideous mismatch with the sandals, which were pale pink. Just as well I didn't like dancing, because I could barely walk in the high strappy sandals, let alone boogie. I spent most of the evening sitting on one of the chairs arranged in a rectangle around the periphery of the school hall, trying to avoid the glance of game young lads who were brave enough to risk getting his foot punctured by a stiletto heel. Joking apart, though, it was a sociable event which gave us a chance to see what our fellow classmates were like when they were free to let their hair down. I recall another dance in the village hall in the 1980s, when Adam and the Ants, Shaking Stevens and the Stray Cats were popular. You can imagine the range of outfits and dance styles, with rockabilly types sporting crepe soles and quiffs, people with white stripes across their faces gyrating to ant music, plus a smattering of heavy metal fans headbanging like they were attempting to shake a cockroach out of their ears. One friend was a Michael Jackson fan and insisted on wearing a lace glove while attempting the moonwalk. As an aside, I will never forget him demonstrating this at a family party, my nan asking, "Is there something wrong with him?" I do feel for today's youngsters who have been brought up with the notion that communicating via social media is socialising and that the internet is the primary way to meet people. Statistics show that young people go to nightclubs and pubs much less frequently than previous generations, which is a shame as I can't help feeling they are missing out. Yes, the discos of yesteryear had their downside for the shy non-dancers like me, but even I was persuaded to dance with a few fellow sticky-up hair people, albeit a kind of shuffle round in circles on the spot, whilst in a bear hug-like clinch. Because each decade has had its own distinctive style, you can immediately see who was into the same fashion and music as you, which provided a good starting point for friendship. You could tell if someone shared your taste, or if their dancing made you cringe just a little bit too much. And there's a few photographs. There's one of a school dance. It says, "School disco enabled youngsters to see their classmates let their hair down in a less formal setting, looking very much like school kids, probably of the late 60s, early 70s. And there's a photograph of Emma's mum in her teens with her dance heyday of the 1950s.
Hughes revealed Defenza as first summer signing. Oxford United said the club is delighted as a Hearts defender joins the squad in its first summer signing. Experienced defender Frankie Kent joins Oxford United with 13 years of league football behind him and more than 400 appearances across Colchester United, Peterborough United and recently in Scotland with Heart of Midlothian. The 30-year-old is a commanding and physical centre-back who proved himself as a League One pedigree when he won promotion with Peterborough in 2021. Meanwhile, last season, Kent helped Hearts secure a second-place finish in the Scottish Premiership. Speaking about joining United, he said, "This is a very exciting move for me to be joining a club with clear ambitions for success. I had very positive conversations with people at the club and I am confident I can use my experience to drive standards, not just on the pitch but off it as well. I understand the demands of this league and I return to England a much better player and leader following 3 fantastic years in Scotland. I've come here to help push the club forward and I'll do everything I can every day to help to improve and achieve our ambitions." Newly appointed head coach Aaron Ramsey said he's delighted with the first signing under his leadership. Mr. Ramsey said, "I had very positive conversations with the club before arriving about the business we wanted to complete this summer, and I'm delighted we've moved quickly to bring in a player of Frankie's quality and character. As a player, Frankie is a dominant, aggressive defender who is comfortable in possession, and his profile fits exactly how we want this team to play. As importantly, Frankie embodies the values we would want to hold throughout the football club. He's someone who will raise the standards and push to help create the elite environment we strive for. As a first signing, it's a real statement for us. We're bringing in someone who can make an immediate impact both on the pitch and within the group." Head of Football Operations, Ed Waldron, last week said himself, "The new head coach and the club are aligned on what we think the squad needs, saying they're ready to get deals done." Following the signing announcement, Mr. Waldron added, "Frankie is a player we've admired for a long time, dating back to his time at Colchester, when he regularly came up against Oxford United. Scotland is a market we monitor closely, and throughout his time at Hearts, Frankie has consistently been one of the league's standout defenders. Our recruitment process combines detailed data analysis with extensive live scouting, and Frankie stood out in every aspect. Equally importantly, our background work highlighted the qualities he brings away from the pitch. He's a strong personality, a natural leader." And there's a picture of this wonderful character with his red t-shirt, fleece on, looking pretty exuberant, as he is described.
So that concludes our recording of the paper this evening. Stay listening, because following this goodbye, there's a few select articles from the monthly magazines. But from us, thank you for listening and goodbye.
This is from the Benton Bulletin, and it's the Earth Trust. Breaking ground at New Wittenham Clumps Visitor Centre. Earth Trust, the charity that cares for the extraordinary Wittenham Clumps, Oxfordshire's largest open access green space, has marked a major milestone with the start of a construction on its new gateway to nature. A ceremonial breaking of ground signals the beginning of on-site construction at the new visitor hub. This follows many years of careful planning to improve access to this much-loved landscape, while continuing to care for the nature and wildlife that make it so special. The Gateway to Nature programme represents a significant investment by Earth Trust to make the Wittenham Clumps landscape more welcoming, easier to access, and better able to connect people with nature. The visitor hub is designed to remove barriers to visiting, whether arriving by car, bike, or on foot, while helping to ease traffic pressure on nearby rural roads. With a growing population in South Oxfordshire and increasing need for access to nature close to home, the timing of this work is particularly important. The new layout will create a safer, clearer starting point for visits into the wider landscape, with improved maps, waymarking and facilities to help people make the most of their time outdoors. Earth Trust's existing visitor centre will be expanded to create a dedicated visitor hub, including a seven-day-a-week cafe offering hot and cold food and refreshments. The centre will act as a clear gateway into the landscape, helping visitors choose routes that match their interests and time available. New walking routes will lead people to explore lesser-known areas around Wittenham Clumps, including our library of trees at Broad Arboretum. The nature-friendly farming path passes recently planted trees that are incorporated into grazed pasture and arable fields. As the trees grow, visitors can see for themselves how trees integrated into farming can support biodiversity. In time, fruit and nuts harvested from these trees will be shared in the cafe. A new vehicle access track from Sires Hill will provide a safer approach to the visitor hub, reducing traffic on the narrow lane that run past the Wittenham Clumps. The track will lead to expanded parking and new bike shelters, helping to manage visitor numbers more effectively and protect the landscape on busy days. Construction follows careful ecological preparation work to protect wildlife on site, including great crested newts, with the support of volunteers. Construction activity will increase over the coming months. The first visitors are expected to use the new access track in September, at which point the current car park entrance will close. Magnificent Seven. Book your tickets for a private garden tour on Thursday the 18th of June in support of Maggie's Oxford, culminating in a delicious lunch at the Coaching Barn in Little Stoke. Garden lovers are invited to step behind closed gates for a day out in aid of Maggie's Cancer Centre at Oxford's Churchill Hospital. The Magnificent Seven Gardens event offers rare access to seven private gardens, hand-picked by Claire Foster, garden editor of House and Garden magazine. The day begins at the Coaching Barn with coffee at 9:30 a.m. before guests set off to explore two clusters of gardens around Ibston and Upper Basildon at their own pace. Among the highlights are the formal borders and wildflower meadow at Pitt House, the richly planted cottage garden at Froome's House, and the historic landscape at Haley House, originally designed by Sylvia Crowe. At the Piano House in Goring, a contemporary design brings a modern contrast. Back at the barn, guests can enjoy a relaxed two-course lunch served between midday and 2 p.m. Alongside a chance to explore Green and Gorgeous Flower Farm, founder Rachel Siegfried will also lead a special tour of the flower fields. With just 100 places available, this is a rare opportunity to enjoy beautiful gardens, meet like-minded enthusiasts, and support a meaningful cause with the perfect summer day. Tickets, £75 per person.
Round and About magazine reports that Wallingford Stroke Club is inviting new members, volunteer helpers and drivers to join its welcoming community. Meeting at 2 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month at Cromarsh Gifford Village Hall, the club has been supporting stroke survivors and their families since 1998, offering friendship, laughter and vital social connection long after formal rehabilitation ends. From quizzes, concerts and cooked lunches to day trips, guest speakers and festive celebrations, the club offers a safe, relaxed space. Volunteer helpers also assist with transport where possible. To find out more, email the club on wallingfordstrokeclub@gmail.com. Still with Round and About magazine, news of the arrival of summer, which you can celebrate with an evening of orchestral music thanks to Langtree Symphonia at Dorchester Abbey at 7 p.m. on Sunday the 7th of June. The orchestra will present well-known British works in this historic setting. The repertoire includes Arthur Sullivan's lively Pirates of Penzance Overture, Edward Elgar's Cello Concerto, featuring soloist Ellen Bormring Gledhill, a finalist in the Young Musicians Competition in 2020, and Hubert Parry's Symphony No. 3, The English. Tickets are £15 per person and £7.50 for students. Under 16s go free. And you can book your tickets at langtreesymphonia.co.uk. Tickets will also be available to buy on the door, subject to availability.
The editor of The Bridge has included this little wry little story. And it's called If Only. There are five passengers on a plane. Donald Trump, Keir Starmer, the Pope, Mark Carney, and a 10-year-old boy. The plane is about to crash, and they find there are only four parachutes. Donald Trump says, "I need one. I'm the smartest guy in the USA, probably the whole world, and so one has got to be mine." He takes one and jumps. Keir Starmer says, "I'm trying to sort things out over Mandelson and some other things too. I need one." He takes one and jumps. Mark Carney says, "I'm the only man standing between Trump and Greenland. I need one." He takes one and jumps. The Pope says to the boy, "I'm in charge of every Catholic in the world, but I'm a man of God and I've lived my life. You have all yours in front of you. Take the last parachute." The boy says, "Don't worry, there are two parachutes left. The smartest man in the USA just took my school bag."